Welcome to the Health Technology Podcast. My name is Christine Minotto. I'm the director of the Rosamund Institute at UCSF. Today, my guest is Mariam Ziyayi, founder and CEO of Isono Health. Isono's health mission is to transform breast cancer screening by combining automated ultrasound and artificial intelligence to empower women and physicians with accessible and personalized breast health monitoring. Let's hear a bit about why Mariam founded Isono Health, where exactly her company is now, and her plans for the future. Enjoy the talk.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I always curious for entrepreneurs, at what stage in their life they say, like, you know, I want to start a company. Is this something that you've done, you're thinking about, do you sell lemonade in a lemonade stand when you were a kid, or where did that come from?
I guess it was a little bit always in me. My dad was, I think I told you, my dad was an entrepreneur. He had also a medical device company. So I always grew up with that notion. And with this company specifically, I had a friend whose mom went through breast cancer. She wore clothes, you know, through when I was going at Stanford. And that was always kind of stuck with me. And I had another friend who went through breast cancer. So it was something that was very close to me. And my co-founder, the same, she had also, she lost a very close friend to breast cancer. So at some point we're talking about this and we started saying, you know, there've got to be a better way for women to monitor their breast health. And, you know, that sort of took us a few months because we both had jobs in industry, we're working, and we're both, you know, had, you know, stable lives and just, you know, very, you know, corporate lives. And then we said, you know, let's do it. And the point for us was, you know, it's just, it became all consuming. You can't stop thinking about it, right? We started researching a little bit and it got more and more and more. And it kind of takes over your daily life and your just mental capacity. And you're like, okay, I'm ready to do this. And at some point, you just got to take the jump, right?
The leap of faith.
The deep end. So that's how we did it, you know. So we just quit our jobs and said, let's do this full time. And it's been almost 3 years, not yet, but
was your dad surprised? Was he like, gosh, if you just give up this, you know, stable job?
Well, my mom said it's your dad's fault.
Okay.
She said it's his fault.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've been doing this now for 3 years. And
almost,
I think you make a good progress. Right. And I'm sure there's sometimes you feel that, oh, why do this? And but you have this passion that you want to save life. So tell us about, like, where you are now. And I mean, you know, you've gone through the stages, getting some early stage funding.
Yeah.
But
we started initially, we bootstrapped, then we went through YC. And after YC, we finished our first prototype, did some clinical studies and decided we want to improve our prototype a little bit. That was kind of the second generation. And now we're in the third sort of prototype. We finished doing that. And then we're planning on doing a clinical, collect some clinical data with that and then submit to our FDA package. And that's where we are. We're sort of in the cusp of transferring from prototyping. We're happy with that to manufacturing, getting our FDA clearance, and hopefully next year, early next year, hit the market.
For the audience, could you tell us about your technology?
Yes, at Isono Heart, we're developing this AI platform to make breast health monitoring accessible and personalized for all women and their physicians. Our device is a compact automated ultrasound scanner that attaches to a position accessory that looks like a bra. It's like a disposable bra. And then we couple that with deep learning. And the benefit of this system is because it's automated, it can be, you know, operated by a non-trained specialist. So in a clinical setting, for example, opens the door for a system to be used in point of care rapid diagnosis. And we add machine learning, deep learning that identifies abnormal masses and helps physicians with a more accurate diagnosis. One of the big benefits of our system is because it's automation, it's repeatable. So over time, you can start to track changes, not only look at one snapshot in time, look how things are changing over time, which gives you a much better picture of the person's breast health overall, actually. And that allows us to make it more personalized and to start looking at your own personal body and your own changes. So that's the big benefit on the hardware and the software side. On the more global perspective, because our system is automated, it can be used in remote areas, places where there's no access to breast health monitoring at all, because there's either no ultrasound tech or there's no radiologist close by. Even here in US, there's a lot of disparities in care. So there are women who says, you know, we interviewed them and they said, you know, I have to fly or drive hours to get to a, you know, health monitoring center. This is a system that can be used in your own local clinic. You walk in, you use it, and then the results can be even interpreted, you know, in a big imaging center in a bigger city when there's more access to specialists. But the idea is to more democratize and level the playing field for all women. So no matter where they are, they can get access. And the AI portion improves the, you know, diagnostic accuracy and personalizes to you.
So when you develop this idea, I mean, being a woman and going through mammogram is always a joke that these are designed by men, which is kind of nice to hear women designing something for women.
Yeah.
I mean, where are you in terms of your product? You know, you have the hardware, you have the software. Which part has been, you know, developed and what does need more work?
Well, we've developed both. We're pushing forward both. On the hardware side, we initially put in more work because it needed a little bit more work, and we're both hardware engineers. And then for the past year and a half, we've focused a little bit more on the software. We've collected 10,000 plus images from a variety of different sources and trained our algorithms. So they're both operational right now. Mm-hmm. We're working with clinical partners from the Texas Medical Center, from Mayo Clinic, Cleveland Clinic, to add more, you know, data to our database. And as we add more data, it becomes more accurate over time. So That's where we are right now. On the hardware side, I mentioned we're just finishing our sort of third generation prototype and hoping that we can do some, once we do some feasibility testing, then we can move that to full-scale manufacturing. So
how do you get the patient data? You team up with different medical centers, you mentioned.
So it's actually, that's one of the challenges in digital health, right? We're both a digital health and connected medical device company. We've initially, we started working with smaller clinics. You know, there's public data bases you can request. That's where we got some of our data. And then now we have some clinical, good clinical partners that we're going to get more, even more clinical data from them. But data is, in this age, data is gold, you know, mm-hmm. and it's challenging to get data. So that's one of the challenges of a lot of companies. So
how do you convince this partner to partner with you? And, you know, I always think that you're a large company, you can...
That's a good question. So from our experience, it's the most important thing is to find a clinical champion. Find a physician PI that is excited about your technology, wants to work with you, and then pushes that forward. I think that's the most important thing. There's a lot of, you know, kinks and, you know, paperwork and things to be worked out on an institutional level, of course. I think having that, you know, that champion, clinical champion who's excited about your technology, I think that's really important.
Building the relationship.
Building the relationship. Sometimes it takes time. Sometimes things move slower than you expect and there's kinks and things, mm-hmm. but it's a startup, right? You got to be flexible and, you know. Yeah, I mean, I think that's, and we're part of the Texas Medical Center Accelerator this past year. And one of the things we really learned was that find that, you know, clinical champion. That's really, really important for, you know, doing anything essentially with a clinical partner.
How crucial was it for knowing somebody in within that center to make that introduction?
It was helpful. I think it was helpful. You've made introductions for me, right? And that was really important too. So I think knowing that networking your way as a startup, that's actually, you know, one of the important skills, I think, for a founder to network your way to the right people and just use your own network to, you know, get connected to people you want. I think that's really, really important. Yeah, it's really important.
Mm-hmm. So now you obviously got your seed funding and now you have the prototype. What's next?
We're fundraising again, and I mentioned we're going to collect some more clinical data with our, we don't need that really for FDA, so in parallel we can, you know, submit our FDA package. And so that those are then transferred to manufacturing. So we have to do some work for that, setting up quality systems. And there are all these things that a medical device company needs to do that are very unique to medical devices. So we're going through that transition. And hopefully, you know, once we fundraise, expand our team and hoping to move faster. So that's where we are right now.
This podcast is sponsored by IO Life Science, a Silicon Valley-based medtech design and development consultancy, transforming your technologies into unique healthcare solutions. For more information, you can visit their website at www.iolifescience.com.
A lot of people came to me mentioned about China nowadays, and of course China have a billion people.
Yeah.
Getting funding from Chinese market and also exploring working with Chinese suppliers.
Yeah.
And being in your space. Do you look into that? Or do you consider that? Or what's...
We've considered it and we've talked to, and we're currently even talking to a few investors and potential partners. I think for that, it's really important to have a local partner, investor, or a corporate partner, strategic partner that can help you with the market. We're not familiar with the market. We're not as familiar with the culture. I think it's important to have someone local there to help with you. But having said that, I'm talking to a lot of people who are familiar with the market and the specific area we're in. Breast cancer screening is a big problem. And specifically with Asian women, there's a higher rate of breast density. And typically, mammogram doesn't work well in dense breasts. So in U.S., that's about, you know, 47-48% of the women. But in Asia, it's higher. It's higher than 60%. So there's even a bigger need for ultrasound screening. There's also the geographic dispersion. There's not just enough ultrasound techs, and there's a lot of people who live in rural areas. So a platform like ours would enable women to get, you know, screening and do the image acquisition, essentially where they are locally, and then the images can be interpreted with the help of AI remotely. So I think that's one of the big things that's important. We've heard from people who are familiar with the market. So that's definitely on our outlook. We're first looking at U.S. for launch, but that's definitely something we're looking at, the global markets, especially places where there has been a bigger need. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, this week I have two friends who told me they have dense breasts and they found a lump, so they have to do a surgery lumpectomy.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's kind of...
Yeah, and unfortunately, with women who have dense breasts, they're kind of hit double because it's harder to detect the masses in dense breasts with mammogram, which is the standard care. And if they don't see it in mammogram, they never get the ultrasound. So that's the problem. And to me as an engineer, it always kind of was backward. I'm like, ultrasound has better sensitivity, but mammogram has better specificity. I feel like we've switched it. But talking to radiologists, one of the, and then experts, one of their challenges with ultrasound has been historically that ultrasound has low specificity. And if we do screening or even pre-screening that we claim with ultrasound, you're going to create a lot of false positives and costs and extra biopsies. And that's the problem actually we're trying to solve. So by making the hardware automated and adding machine learning and deep learning, we're improving the specificity of ultrasound to a point that we don't cause extra false positives. So then it can be used as a pre-screening tool or a self-monitoring tool. And by making it more accessible, hopefully you can do it on a more, because ultrasound is safe, you can do it on a more regular basis. So then this way we can develop a baseline and then track changes over time. So that's sort of the big picture, but we're going to work really tough to it. So.
It's good to have more option, and I think repeatability.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, I always think that, I don't know, I think many women are more disciplined about doing self-exam.
Yeah.
And that also can cause a problem because depending what news you hear that day, you might think that.
Yeah. I mean, there's studies shown that, you know, self-exam is not very accurate. And by the time you really feel something, it's on a larger size. You know, we want to detect it way before that. And it causes unwanted anxiety and all that. So we kind of want to give women a peace of mind yeah. about their breast health. That's the overall goal, to be honest. And we're just using this as a tool to give them peace of mind about their breast health.
So is the idea is that your device would be available when women go to their physical exam once a year?
Yeah, I mean, the idea is, it's something that can be used in your OBGYN's office and initially at breast cancer clinics and OBGYN's offices. And then potentially even something that can be done, you know, at your local pharmacy. You walk into, for example, CVS or your workplace clinic, on-campus clinic. You walk in and then, you know, you do the exam and you walk out and then we compare the images. And if there's something to flag and warn you about, we'll let you know. We have an app that couples with the system. So that's kind of the idea. It can be done eventually at home too. It's something that we can even send to you at home. For example, you can do the exam and keep the device for a few days and send it back. It's not something you need to do on a daily basis, so that system would work well. And depending on your risk, you can do more often or less often. Mm-hmm. If you're a high-risk woman, maybe you want to do every 6 months or 3 months if you have some sort of a symptom. But if you're an average-risk woman, once a year, you can do something like this. So that's sort of the idea that you can do more, and we can tailor it based on your own needs. That's if you're high-risk or not. So
your first target market now is going to be the devices being used in clinic first?
Yes.
And why is that? Why that approach?
There is two reasons. First, there is, to be honest, lower regulatory burden, so for us. And also, we thought it's important for the clinicians to know our device, to understand what it does, and essentially something that they do, they would recommend to their physicians, you know, or at least be aware of it. So that's why we thought we can launch in clinics first and then gain that regulatory and clinical traction. And once we did that, then we can move it to sort of a more walk-in type of a clinic or, you know, a corporate wellness program and things like that. So that's why, because we wanted, as a high-risk woman or an average-risk woman, you go to your doctor and ask about the system. They say, oh, yeah, I know about it. If, you know, either they're using it or previously or they've heard about it, you know, in a paper or, you know, at a conference. So we sort of wanted be, you know, get that clinical approval and then by the physicians and then move it to a more consumer setting. So,
yeah, no, I think, you know, everything is becoming more telemedicine.
Yes.
I mean, when I call my doctor, I'd rather give them a call rather than come make the appointment.
Yeah.
Because it takes more of my time.
Yeah, exactly.
And this approach would help.
Yeah, and even for the clinician's office, we're faster, right? So, you know, in typical handheld ultrasound would take you 20, 30 minutes to do a whole breast, and ours takes, you know, 1 to 2 minutes. So that's one of the big advantages for a physician. And on top of that, it's automated, so it can be done by a medical assistant, for example, or a nurse in the office, especially since there's shortage of ultrasound techs. And radiologists, this opens the door for more physicians having it locally accessed. So you don't have to, as you said, you know, travel far distance, or, you know, you can just walk into your local pharmacy, eventually maybe comes to your door, you know, and you can do it yourself. So that's kind of, we want to make it more accessible, easier for women so that you do it more regularly. And then we can catch those cancers when they're really treatable. Breast cancer is one of those cancers that if it's caught in the early stages, there's proof, there's clinical proof that you can treat, you know, 98-99% of breast cancers when it's early stage.
Right.
But unfortunately, when it starts to metastasizing, then the survival rate drops to 25%. So we want to make sure those cancers are caught when it's treatable. And to overall health system, the cost of treatment is much lower. It's 10 times lower when you're early stage versus late stage. So that's a big difference for the payers, for the, you know, for the healthcare system. So not only we're saving lives, you're saving a lot of money if you can catch those cancers early. So,
yeah. So, I mean, that's a lot of work that you're doing. And there's a lot, and I imagine, you know, in anything in life, there's a lot of ups and downs.
Yeah.
You know, there's a good time and there's the challenging time.
Yeah.
And what drives you to continue to ride through the challenging time? Because life is
tough.
In wave.
Yeah. It is. I mean, I think first in the beginning you suffer, but over time you get used to it. And as long as you have the I think the vision, the awareness that there are a lot of ups and downs, and when you are in the bottom, you know, there's going to be, you know, an up soon. And then when you're on top, you know, don't get overly, you know. So I think that awareness really helps. But also I think passion. If you're passionate about what you do, I think that's the most important. Because I always tell my friends, and there are some of them are like, I just want to do a startup. I'm like, you know what? That's a really stupid reason to do a startup. Because just for the sake of being in a startup, it's not a good reason. It's tough. And if you are not passionate about specific solution you're delivering and passionate about making a difference with the customer and the user you're serving, it's not worth it. It's not, you know, it's not something for that to be done just for the sake of it. So I think that passion is really important. And even more for me, you know, having really close friends of mine recently gone through breast cancer and watching them and then, you know, seeing them, you know, being worried every day. You know, I have a friend of mine who's my age, you know, she went through breast cancer very recently in the past year. And,
that's young.
You know, she, you know, she was saying, you know, I'm worried about her constantly. And there's women, you know, who are not even gone through that. They're my friends. They're like, you know, they keep asking, when are you coming out with your device? And I'm like, oh, you got to wait a little bit, you know. So that actually gets us through the tough times because I see women out there that are excited about using our technology and could help them, you know, get a little bit of peace of mind and, you know, focus on what really matters and their health. So that's what gets us going.
Yeah, I mean, we all, I'm sure, know a lot of people who have had breast cancer.
Yeah,
who survived
unfortunately,
or did not
yes,
make
unfortunately,
it.
Yes.
And so they can relate a lot of the stuff.
Yeah,
that you're
unfortunately.
Doing.
Yeah, I mean, often when I go to you know, different events and I give talks, you know, one of the questions I ask is, who here knows someone who's, you know, had breast cancer? And often a lot of hands goes up. It's, you know, most hands goes up, actually. So,
which is a good thing and a bad thing.
It's a good thing and a bad thing. It's it means that there's awareness and it's a big problem, but it means that
the
problem is not
too.
Solved. Yeah. So there's we have a role. Hopefully we can play a role in solving that problem. So
this podcast is sponsored by IO Life Science, a Silicon Valley-based medtech design and development consultancy, transforming your technologies into unique healthcare solutions. For more information, you can visit their website at www.iolifescience.com.
And having a, because you have a partner in crime, Shetty,
yes.
too,
yeah.
So I think having somebody who shared a passion.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you meet your founders?
So we were friends for a few years. And so we already knew each other on a personal basis before. So, and I mostly came to get out of that, this mutual passion, having mutual unfortunate experiences of having lost people to breast cancer. And that's how we started the company. And we have very complementary skills and personalities. So that actually over time, I think helps. So that we, you know, we see different things, you know, and that's something I think it's good to have in a co-founder.
Yeah, complementary.
Yeah, very important. Because if you both agree on everything, it might be easier, right? Less tension and less fights and all that, but you miss things because, you know, you're looking at this from the same perspective. I think it's important to have different perspectives between founders and, or at least in the team, have different perspectives. So somebody questions, you know, what we're doing, and somebody who's detail-oriented, we're talking about that, somebody who looks at the bigger picture, you know, and so things can move efficiently, but the product is done right. So
it's almost like marriage. You have the same priority,
it is.
But then everybody kind of bring in their little perspective
it is,
and make it
is.
More
it is.
Rewarding and fuller experience.
Yes.
There's no dull moment.
Yes.
Okay. You have an office now down in San Francisco with many of companies that we support.
Yeah.
I know. How's that working?
It's great. We love it. We share offices with a few companies, and I love the location. It's nice. We have a good view of the water, you know. It's kind of relaxing, you know. Yeah, it's nice. We really like it.
Because there's a few companies in that spot, and how, I mean, when I was working for a startup, we have, you know, basically their office is just us.
Yeah.
But they have, you know, this is almost like you have multiple companies doing different things. Is that helpful?
It's super helpful because...
In what way?
Especially because we're all medical device companies. So we all have very similar needs. And, you know, the other day, they're talking to their quality guy, right? Mm-hmm. And I was just sitting in the next cube, so I overheard. And, you know, we're looking also for a quality person, quality management system. And I heard the guy, and he was very detailed, and I saw how methodical he was, you know, going through it, and how he let the founders themselves, you know, learn and, you know, do things themselves versus just sort of giving them a system and saying do's and don'ts. So very adaptable to the startup need. And then I asked him and he said, oh yeah, he has a startup package and we talked and we really liked him. And now we're signing up with him to, you know, to do our quality management system and be a quality consultant. So that's the sort of, that's an example. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there are other founders there who've done a lot of fundraising and, you know, I can ask for intros to investors and regulatory consultants and, you know, and there are many engineers, you know, sometimes I pass by, you know, in the kitchen and we'll talk about it and, you know, and they're saying, oh, we're developing this sensor. And I said, oh, that's what I used to do. And, you know, so I can give advice. You can, you know, you can get advice. You can exchange, you know, advice. And then, you know, there's a lot of other common things that we can change, exchange besides just the office. So yeah. I think it's very useful, actually.
Yeah. So. I think it's always nice. I'm a people person. So seeing other people, that's, you get ideas from other people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And we have people in different stages of development and, you know, stage of a company life cycle. So I think that helps. You know, we have people who are just starting, just, you know, bouncing off ideas and people who are a little bit behind us, a little bit ahead of us and people who are way ahead of us. So it's kind of the full spectrum almost.
You can see what's to look forward to.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, exactly.
I was there.
Exactly. There's times when you say, oh, I've been there, you know, and... you know, I was writing a grant and, you know, I was giving advice. I was like, oh, yeah, this is what we did for our phase one grant, for example. We got an SFSBR grant and we're just saying that.
Congratulations.
And thanks. That was last year. So yeah. Now we're going for the phase two. So,
yeah,
I mean, that's the sort of, I think that that's really helpful, you know. It's almost like a mini device incubator. Yeah. So medical device incubator.
No, I know. So. They are all from, like, you know, many of them are in our ecosystem.
Yes, I think we're all almost fellows or pledge members, innovators. Yeah.
So it's kind of nice to see that family hanging tight. That's good. So what do you do for fun? I mean, this must consume you.
Yeah.
And I just realized, you know, I'm doing the Rosen Institute and people ask me, what's for fun? I was like, gosh, I'm thinking about work all the time. Do you have other?
I try. I can't say always. Sometimes I kind of like working intensely when I have to. And then when there's a little bit of time to take off, I try to just, you know, see my friends, mm-hmm. and, you know, and I really like outdoors stuff, which is perfect here in California. I like hiking and biking when I can. And then, you know, that's the sort of thing. Doing a little bit of outdoorsy stuff and then seeing my friends. And I used to like cooking a lot, but I don't have time for that a lot. So.
Well, at least now you use your cooking to make the gel. tell me about the gel. Story. I thought that was really fun to hear.
Yeah, we're just talking about experimenting with the bra and the gel. Because
you have to make
for different prototypes.
Prototype for breast consistency. Yeah. That must be quite interesting.
Yeah, we're constantly making different breast sizes, and people are coming and saying, "What are you doing?" We have a whole counter of different breast sizes. So, but it's part of our usability testing. So now we're getting to a phase that our prototype is ready, and we're you know, we're trying to make sure it's user friendly. That's really really important to us as founders because. Sometimes in the past, it's not necessarily usability hasn't been the focus of medical devices. Mm-hmm. But as we move towards, because we designed this with sort of the consumer in mind and, you know, as something that can be used by a non, you know, specialist, then it's super important to us that it's a simple, easy to use, you know, error proof. So we're doing a lot of, that's one of our big focuses right now, doing usability testing, both on the software and the GUI part, and then on the hardware. We want to make sure that it works flawlessly and really well, both in the clinical setting in the beginning and then eventually outside. So
what you're saying is that for your device, then you provide some sort of room or flexibility for people with different breast size, and also does it also have the density, or I mean, I don't know.
So we have different sizes that different bra sizes, right? So there's the bra part is a plastic disposable. It's there's not much technology in there really. So that we provide different sizes, and then there's the gel, paste. You have to put gel on there anyway. So there's a gel paste that you put on there, and then you attach the scanner. The scanner magnetically snaps into the bra accessory.
So it's always stay in one place.
Then. Yeah, exactly. So there's like the magnets, you just put it on and then you press start and it goes. Essentially it's hands-free after that. So the goal of the bra is twofold. One is to keep the breast in the field of view and keep it stationary. And then it's repeatable, right? Because every time you're doing it the same. So that helps with the repeatability. It's comfortable. It's, one of the things that was important to us when we were talking to industrial designers initially, they came up with a lot of different ideas. And to us, it was really important that it's something that women are familiar with. Every woman knows how to put on a bra. Mm-hmm. Ours is just a modified version of that. We know there's just an opening in the center. So that was really important to us. We keep trying it on and say, okay, this is not really comfortable. This here is not. So it's super important to us as women who are designing it. And in general, it's just as engineers, it's something that is comfortable. It's usable. It's repeatable. Right. So it's challenging to get these two, work really well together, because the functionality is key and important. But usability and comfort and patients that, we're putting patients in the center is really important to us personally too. So we're trying to put that together and doing a lot of usability experiments now. We have a consultant who's also helping us with that, who's an expert, yeah.
So have you tried it?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You're the first guinea pig?
Yeah, we have tried it, but... Hopefully, we're going to try it on a lot more people soon. So
that's a nice thing about your device is not invasive, that you can try it on the founders.
Yes. I mean, the guinea pigs.
The guinea pigs. So that's great. Thank you, Mary MCIE, founder and CEO of iCenter Health.
Thank you for having me.